Thank you, Robert. This is the switchover time.
Robert, we have now become free the land. The land is free here now.
Hardly. I mean, glad to hear it.
No, actually, it isn't. We still pay rent for this room. And still have no seat on the anarchistic board that runs this. But anyways, we're going to talk about Peace Camp Trial tonight.
Ho-ho.
Ed will be calling in, or we'll call him a little later. In the studio right now, I have Bob the Anarchist, although that's not his
Bob the well-hung anarchist, actually.
Exactly. Thank you.
He's a member of the Jolly Lodgers.
The many Jolly Lodgers.
Yeah. Part of the Peace Camp 2010.
Yes.
Accused of 647E, lodging on government property without the permission of the controller or the owner, although it was never established who the owner was in the trial.
Hmm. Well, you know, I think that Bob and the other, God, I don't know, hundreds of people who went through that peace camp, I reached a maximum of about 60 or 65 on a couple
per
of
night,
nights,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are really heroes in this community. I mean, not only were they fighting the absurd sleeping ban law that, you know, is in the city, but they provided a safe and legal place and sanitary place for people to sleep for at least a month, and then they continued raising the issue as a moral issue for 2 months
while getting tickets.
What?
While getting tickets. The last 2 months is when the tickets started flying.
Well, yeah, but all these tickets happened in, you know, at the very end of the first month. They all happened in the early days of August. We're talking about these misdemeanor tickets that were used to kick out the people and scare them away.
I think August 7th was the first day
they
warned a week before, and then they came in and started issuing tickets and making arrests. Bob, you got a ticket the first night, is that correct?
Yeah. I got woken up in the middle of the night with a flashlight in my eyes, and it was, oh no, not again. So,
another night in the life of a homeless person.
Oh yeah,
flashlight in the eyes. Time to move along.
It's
here, sign
fun.
This, please.
I mean, we're talking about a community that has 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people and zero walk-in emergency beds. Though I guess in court they claimed that there were three beds,
or one or two, on exactly the nights they needed to make the charges stick.
Actually, I don't think did they have statistics for that night. I thought they didn't have any specifics. Specific statistics for the nights where the defendants were charged.
Well, now, they got them now.
They were. It was the mental health section of Front River, or whatever
the,
it is.
The street shelter. Yeah, that was the final bit of testimony. But
they keep four emergency beds, and they only have to keep one for somebody with a mental health emergency. So there's three they can kind of give away if they so choose. She didn't say that they were absolutely guaranteed it. They could have been denied. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, you know, it has to be said that there's a the whole prosecution was discriminatory. It was a huge amount of public expense in this week-long trial.
Well, remember, the courthouse is a place of business. That's where the DA Dabowski makes her money.
Well, you know, they can make money, hopefully, with cases that actually involve real public safety.
I know. She could actually be doing something with the people instead of just,
shit, you know. I mean, and what it really is, it's a sort of a...
harassment.
Slap across the chops of activists who have embarrassed the city and the county by exposing the fact that in spite of this last-minute patching up of testimony, they didn't have, they're nowhere near any kind of shelter or, you know, the overwhelming majority of homeless people every night, and even the overwhelming majority of people who were at the county building on the nights when you,
that's
Bob,
right,
and the others got tickets.
I know, there was only one or two beds open, and there was at least 10 every night. So it wasn't, there weren't beds open for everyone at the protest. So it's just a legal technicality to make them guilty, which the jury did find, although in Bob's case, it was a hung jury.
You want to tell us about that, Bob? Why do you think your jury hung?
Well, my jury was hung because basically I had a defense based on necessity, and I had a dog with me at the time of the protest, which means I couldn't really go into any shelters. There's no shelters around here that let you get in with a dog, and I couldn't really sleep anywhere else because everywhere else you were getting illegal camping tickets. I get an illegal camping ticket, you know, and I don't want to sign it or anything. They take away my dog and my dog's dead, so, hey.
Yeah, he goes into the pound that you explained she immediately said, "What, the cops didn't threaten to kill your dog?" He said, "Well, no, they said that they'll bring in animal control will take the dog, but to get it out of the pound, it's $200, and you're a homeless person, you don't have $200, so it's essentially a death sentence for his dog," which really struck the jury, and the big Dabowski, the DA, she got very upset when that got into evidence.
She's cute. She's cute when she's angry, I gotta say. I was getting kind of red-faced on the stand there. Oof. But...
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, did you talk to the jurors afterward? How did you find out what actually motivated them in the jury room?
How did you know that, Bob?
Well, there was only one person, a lady whose name I shall not mention, on the jury that ended up giving me not guilty. And she found that I had completed all the grounds of necessity defense. Partially because of my dog and partially because of parts of my other testimony, I guess.
So it was an 11-1 for conviction, but because this one juror held out, they're going to have to decide next week whether they want to try you again.
Yep.
And was there a lot of pressure on this woman to vote guilty?
I imagine so. Yeah.
It kind of looks like it.
I mean, you had a conversation with her?
No, I was unable
to. You're not allowed to do that, are you?
I'm not allowed to.
No, you are allowed to. You always.
Now you can, right?
You can always talk to the jurors after the trial. Media, defendants, prosecution, lawyers, everybody can talk to the jurors after the trial.
Oh, then she was just playing hard to get then, I see.
Well, I know that, you know, I heard the activist and writer Becky Johnson, who's written a lot about this case on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website, did talk to eight of the 12 jurors, and I guess there were also two alternates.
Uh-huh.
Huh?
Have you read it?
She hasn't written about it yet that I know of, or it hasn't been published, but she spoke to me earlier today, and she said she had quite a bit of testimony from the jurors. Some of them she just spoke to. Others she recorded their testimony outside the courtroom after the trial was over.
Now, these jurors found the other defendants guilty, as well as Ed Fry, who was a defendant, and the lawyer.
Right. That's what I understand, although I wasn't there, of course, for the final day of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
Or the final day of deliberations and most of the Friday of the trial. I guess they deliberated for about a day today, all throughout Monday, mm-hmm. and then they came back, what, about mid-afternoon? Was that right, Bob?
Yep. I'd say around 2:30.
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting. The courts are kind of a rigged game. You can't, you know, it's some people have the activists have the hope that they can use courts for educational purposes, but that's often very hard to do because the rules are so constrictive,
mm-hmm.
and the scheduling is all in the hands of, you know, the judges and the court administrative people, and the DA can. It's really kind of their ballpark. As you know, you can't. I remember when I was being tried 22 years ago, actually, in one case, people came into the courtroom with banners. That's mm-hmm. the only time I've ever seen banners in a Santa Cruz courtroom. But if you try to raise banners these days or signs, you can do it at city council, but you can't do it in the court.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you can do it outside the court. We used to have, you know, we would have meals on the steps, and we still mm-hmm. have to some extent. To dramatize when people who are standing up for homeless people are being confronted with these ridiculous prosecutions, whether mm-hmm. it's Anna Richardson and Miguel de Leon, homeless people themselves, who are facing this ridiculous injunction that costs the county tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, they're spending all kinds of money to harass the homeless. Money that could be used, like, say, for the swimming pool at Harvey West for kids and stuff. I mean, it's just a waste of money. Why give it to Barisoni? Why give it to the big... What's her name?
Oh,
the big Dabowski.
Well, Susan Mariello is the chief administrative officer of the county.
Oh, she's the one in control of all the property that the county.
Theoretically,
owns.
Yeah, I think so.
She's the controller.
I mean, I think you probably talked about it, and as you know, I have a show too, and I've talked about the 647E law, which is mm-hmm. ridiculous in itself, and you know, it's probably rarely used for that reason because it. It is so vague, although, you know, who knows?
Also, it's a misdemeanor.
Maybe they're going to use it more now. The law that says, you know, you cannot lodge in any place where, what does lodging mean? Well, it means whatever the judge suddenly tells the jury.
Mm-hmm.
It actually means, you know, it really should mean what, you know, what is in terms of what is just and fair, and the jury should, you know, be encouraged to see that perspective. But of course, that is a no-no to say in court, even though in fact it is the power of the jury to make those decisions.
Oh, the jury nullification, that was brought up early. I heard in the jury selection, one of the jurors says, well, I'm not just not going to do this, I'm going to nullify.
And yeah, I interviewed
they let him and explain the theory and everything.
I interviewed that juror outside the courtroom. At least I interviewed one of those. There were actually three or four jurors who, you know, who really were upset with the whole prosecution. One of whom talked about jury nullification, which are also known as jury independence, which says that, which is really the understanding that most people don't have. If the judge tells you one thing, the juror can decide whatever she or he wants.
Well, it was the interpreting the laws is generally considered the court's purview, but that's only from Marbury Madison. The court gave that to themselves. The Constitution only guarantees a jury trial. It doesn't say anything about the jury not being able to interpret.
The courts actually, throughout the 19th century, there was a jury nullification was considered a part of the mm-hmm. The net standard practices. It was only toward the end of the 19th century when they wanted to use jury trials against labor unions in mm-hmm. the case of Sparf versus Hansen, I think it was called, in 1892 or something.
Getting into the history here, Robert. So it was used to repress, because, yeah, you should be able, it's like the fourth check against bad government. The people should be able to say, this is a fucking bad law, and just
they
throw
are,
the case
they
out.
They are able. Jurors can say not guilty, and they can't be held accountable in any other place for their decision.
Right.
And you don't have to justify it.
That's right.
And therefore, if jurors know this, you know, some jurors, you know, the problem with the jurors are that, A, they don't want to be there because they're wasting their time and money
right.
by being
there.
They
could be making money, yep.
And so, you know, you have to be a very committed juror, a potential juror, to want to sit through a week's trial on such a stupid issue as this, and particularly when they don't tell the jurors what the penalties are. The penalties are up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine mm-hmm. per count of 647E.
Although I hear John Gallagher said no one's going to
he
jail
keeps
on this.
That, but that, you know, that's, you know, he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
That's disputable at this point, I think.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, yeah, I mean, actually, in any criminal case, particularly cases not involving violence, you know, what the judges may do is they may say, we'll put you on probation if you want. Now, if you know, these activists want to take probation, I've never have. Maybe I have once. Let me see. But rarely take probation. Then that means anytime you get into any problems with the cops, then the full hammer of the law can come down on
that's
you.
That's right. And for a homeless person, they have to do that every single night. So there's no. We saw what happened when Wes Motes took it. You know, he got busted for being in a parade. You know.
Well, no, but he didn't. Yeah, I mean, they can make exceptions and say that infractions will not be counted against you if you sit. But again, if you're sleeping outside, who knows if they're going to charge you with an infraction
it could be
or
a misdemeanor?
You know,
that's what they got charged for.
Because these four defendants, you, Bob, and the four other defendants, I should say,
uh-huh.
were all tried for misdemeanor sleeping, even though, you know, the protest was against the sleeping ban, a city infraction. In fact, that's probably one of the reasons they did charge you, because the law is a misdemeanor. It enables them to jail you and threaten you with even more counts of jail, whereas under the city's law, you can't be so threatened.
Well, the thing is, me and all my defendants, my fellow defendants, are all homeless, and you know we really don't have any money to pay for any fines that they're gonna throw at us. You know, I'm pretty sure I don't want to go on probation, but I don't know what any other option I have at this point. I'll have
You're not convicted. You're innocent now until proven guilty. You're the only one of the five who is now still at large and innocent. You're a menace, frankly. You may sleep at any time.
Oh, yeah. I'm planning on doing some of that tonight. We'll see what
happens.
I think
it's a little irresponsible for this guy, Free, whoever he is, to have you on the air.
I mean,
why, you know, you make sure he doesn't sleep in the studio there, Free.
Oh, well, he can't do that. That's banned by the collective.
There you go. See, at least we have a law-abiding collective.
Yep.
Not quite as anarchistic as we may claim.
Well, you know how it is. You can't get everything that way. These things
take
time.
Man, I can't sleep anywhere.
Yeah.
That is the front line in the class war. Where can you sleep?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to sound off. And, of course, if people want to hear more, I'll be babbling about the issue on Thursday night, 6 to 8 on my show on the same station. And I guess...
Sunday morning as well, I imagine.
Check Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com. Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com to get a really detailed analysis of a lot of what went on in court. She was there in the front row, writing away, taking down everybody's quotes.
She got admonished just like I did for interfering during Ed's testimony.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she's
troublemakers.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ed needed a lot of help. Ed Frye, of course, was the attorney, and he was way over his head. You know, he tried very hard, and he will be coming on to talk about the case.
Yeah, right after you, actually.
You know, he's to be commended for his good work.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the whole thing, as I said from the very beginning, needed five attorneys, not one.
Uh-huh.
It needed, you know, months and months of prep. It needed discovery. It needed public relations work. But, you know, even then, you could have been, your face was
You're still going to get screwed in the end, you know.
Yeah.
We were both upset that Monica Mendacity Martinez, the head of the Homeless Service, didn't get subpoenaed early so we could find out if they were full or not, you know, early on. But the same thing, these same beds that they magically found would have still been found even if we had been able to subpoena.
Well, yeah,
so
of course, this whole trial sets things up for the next trial, which is coming up in about a month. Linda LeMaster, who is the chair of the former
Homeless
Task Force, she'll be going to trial for the same charge, essentially around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Supporting people protesting who have no legal place to sleep, and yet they're faced with a criminalization if they fall asleep after 11 o'clock at night anywhere in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also 6 months in jail, so they will have a place to sleep for 6 months if they are sentenced to the full extent of the law.
Three hots and a cot.
That's like over $30,000 for 6 months in jail for these people, right?
You know, that would be one way, like the IWW, the Wobblies of the early 20th century, would be to fill the jails. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a whole different... requires a whole different effort, and, you know, who wants to go to jail anyway? In such a wretched situation, people prefer to be outside, even running from the police. So,
well, if you don't even want to be in the shelter, you certainly don't want to be in jail, because the shelter is essentially a form of jail.
Right, but you get time off during the day for good behavior.
Yeah, there you go. Time to go look for work.
Indeed. Well, listen, I appreciate it, Free. Thanks for calling. Any further questions?
Sure.
I can answer any of your questions.
All right, I think we're going to have Steve on later, probably after 9:15, unless we get too depressed about the case, and we could call him at suicide prevention.
All right. Well, there you are.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. All righty, Bob. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the case as you saw it? I'm going to try and get it.
For the most part, it was kind of a zoo, because in the beginning, there were about 80 jurors, and all of them, I could tell, didn't really want to be there, and about four of them just pretty much said this is bullshit and got up and left, because they were pretty much all on our side, and they said that this is stupid, you know, that they're taking all the taxpayers' money to put into this trial that's just bullshit to begin with. So from that point, I could tell that it was going to take a while, and took about 3 days to even get the jury selected, and after that, the trial was kind of long, and really went off into certain directions that I think it shouldn't have really have gone to, and didn't really have anything to do with the charges that we were being brought against. They were just trying to make us look bad.
Mm-hmm. They're make you the villain.
Yeah. It's really easy to do that, you know, when you're looking at a homeless guy. But anybody else, I'm sure it's kind of hard. But people have so much prejudice against homeless people in the first place that, you know, it's kind of hard to bring out just to take out at least some of that contempt in court.
Yeah. I just kept going on and on about the litter that was there and smelled like pee.
Oh, yeah, they were talking about
the steam
feces
clean the sidewalk.
Yeah.
I think Gary said to them, well, they'll find a way to spend money no matter what, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was actually there when they were steam cleaning the sidewalk, and I was looking at one side and the other, and I couldn't really tell much of a difference. It, to be honest, I think that the place was just as dirty as it was when it was steam cleaned than when we left it.
Yeah, it never seemed that dirty to me, really.
No.
Like I said, again, they're just making you the villain.
Oh, yeah. And later on, when we all made our cases, the prosecution really went kind of on a rampage and was really oppressive and trying to destroy us. But thankfully, someone decided to throw me a bone.
Ed?
This is Fran. We'll put you on the air.
Well?
This is
the
call.
Ed?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
All right, you're on the air. We're here with Bob the Anarchist.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Ed?
Good. So, what's up?
We were just talking about the trial. Robert was on a little bit. So, looks like you're going into the big house here, Ed, huh?
Yeah, I'm a horrible criminal, and I'm headed off to jail. Soon, no doubt.
We're all criminals.
Yeah.
Now you're going to need a swimming pool at that jail now, right, in order to continue your medical treatment?
Well, yeah, so I'm hoping they'll send me one of those resort type prisons, you know.
It's too bad you didn't commit a federal crime, Ed.
That's right. I don't think Santa Cruz County has the facilities I need.
So how did it go today in court? I mean, do you have like sidebar meetings and stuff? I didn't get in today.
Yeah, first of all, the jury had a question for us, and so I had to, you know, go all the way down to the courthouse, and the judge and the other prosecutor were there, and so they asked for a definition. How do you define protest? Or please repeat your definition of protest to us. Somebody was under the impression that the judge had defined protest, the word, and... we had to all say, well, no, we don't remember.
Did you tell them lodging?
What? No, they didn't. They had a definition for lodging, which the judge gave them, which is a real leg up for the prosecutor, mm-hmm. You know, saying that lodging is sleeping, which the state of California and everybody, all the localities also are too afraid to use the word sleeping. They use euphemisms instead, like camping or lodging.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really what they're talking about, is people sleeping.
Or pooping and peeing, that's what it means, right? Lodging means pooping and peeing and leaving litter. Because that's pretty much what they brought up constantly throughout the whole trial.
Yeah, we, I mean, we are homeless, but God, it's not like we live in a decrepit place with feces everywhere.
Oh no, it was real clean. I thought, you know, it was with the outhouse.
Oh, I cleaned it every day myself, along with Gary and Todd and a few other people.
Yeah,
there were no government workers out there cleaning it, other than the gardener, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't create any mess. We didn't do any property damage. We didn't bother anybody. All we did was sleep, really, basically, and then we got the hell out of there by 8 a.m. So we weren't in anybody's way for any court business or any other business, and didn't...
I mean, there were people staying there. They had to guard their stuff, afterwards. So there were people there during the day, and that was what the big complaint was originally, is the government workers were so upset that they might be... They thought they were being hypothetically threatened, I think you called it.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
they were asking for escorts, I believe, and that's just kind of ridiculous because, we're not.
It's nice to be a government worker. The county sheriff comes down there and escorts you in and out of the building.
Well, yeah, the homeless are the new lepers.
Well, I imagine if anybody in the general public feels threatened on Pacific Avenue, they can just call up the county sheriffs and they'll escort you down the street for your shopping.
Yeah. So the real forum here is going to be the Court of Appeal.
Yeah. Because that's where you change the laws, right?
That's where we get to change the law, we hope. Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, this is a win.
Yeah. Say that again?
It's a win, really. I mean, Bob got off, but you can still press this at a higher court of appeal and actually overturn the law, because it is unconstitutional. It's ridiculous to think that you don't have a right to sleep.
Yeah.
As Judge Gallagher said.
Yeah. So that's what we'll do, is the Court of Appeal, and that's in San Jose.
And well, you got to go to this one first, right?
No, not here, because that's only for appeals on infractions. This is an appeal of a misdemeanor. It goes directly to the Court of Appeal in San Jose.
Interesting.
If we lose there, we go to Sacramento, or the Supreme Court.
Really? That's only one step up from there.
Actually, it's in San Francisco is where the Supreme Court usually holds court.
And this is all state court, and then you still have the federal option.
And then we still have the U.S. Supreme Court, but of course, when you look at who's on the U.S. Supreme Court, it doesn't...
Well, you want to go through the Ninth Circuit first, wouldn't you?
Nope. No, you go... Once the highest court in California decides on its own law, then you go to the U.S. Supreme Court. If we had been in federal district court, you know, for the trial... Then we would go to the Ninth Circuit.
I see.
But now that we've been in state court, we stay in state court until the U.S. Until the California Supreme Court makes its decision. So,
what if you don't? What if you only get to the San Jose level and they turn you down at San Jose? Can you go into federal court then?
Nope. No. We go, if they turn us down in San Jose, then we go to the California Supreme Court.
Yeah, so. Huh.
But anyway, the issues that we have are really wonderful issues. The Ninth Amendment.
State and federal.
Yeah.
Never been tested before, right?
Right. Yeah, the state has the analog to the Ninth Amendment is the same thing. The Ninth Amendment, which I should explain to the listeners and so on, is that the Ninth Amendment says that the enumeration of certain rights in this Constitution shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And others retained by the people means, the various rights, like the right to breathe, right to eat, to drink, right to defecate and urinate, and right to sleep.
And that's where, actually, the Judge Gallagher violated that. He used the existence of the rights in the Constitution, said they were of a political nature, and that meant your personal rights don't exist. So he was actually violating the Ninth in his ruling.
Yeah. What he was trying to was make the classical distinction between civil rights and human rights, and of course, the U.S. Recognizes civil rights like, right to freedom of speech and so on. And
privacy.
Equal protection. But not human rights like the right to health care and the right to rest,
breathe,
sleep, Yeah, that you find in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And that's really the better document for all of us. I mean, I have little hope for this country if we keep on with the way we, rule upon people's rights. Because we keep stepping on the little guy so badly and enhancing the wealth of the big guy that, it could come to a violent revolution.
That's what usually happens. It's kind of like a snake. The rich just gradually strangle more and more money out of us until we have nothing left to live for, essentially. And that's when people say, "Well, I can just do revolution." Not that I'm advocating it; that would be seditious.
Yeah.
I think nonviolent revolution is legal and perfectly feasible.
Well, I have a form of nonviolent revolution up my sleeve, and I've been advocating it for a long time. Mm-hmm. It's just to establish.
Hello?
And citizens and the office holders.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing that Barack Obama, when Egypt started to come apart in January of this year, his advice, his public advice to Mubarak was, "Oh, Mr. Mubarak, you should establish a dialogue between the citizens of Egypt and the government." Well, I think that'd be a nice idea for our country, because we have nothing like dialogue in this country. All we have is sound bites coming. One-way communication from every office holder.
The people need more power. And we saw a demonstration of the power of the people in this trial. One juror hung the conviction of Bob the Anarchist here.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there was a doctor on the jury panel, and he went off on this woman resisting, you know, all the other 11 people.
Oh, yeah?
And he just totally, almost out of control. And that's why the jurors just called a halt to the whole thing, because this guy was going off.
You're breaking up a little. So he went... The doctor was so upset that she was keeping him still, because they have to stay there and talk her out of it, you know, and he has his practice to get back to and make, what, you know, $300 an hour or something.
Oh, he was pissed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so...
she probably cost him, like, $2,000. He had to stay another day lost, you know?
Yep. That was pretty sad, but... I'm glad she held out.
She held on, and that shows you one person can make a difference in our democracy.
Yeah. I wish she'd held out for the whole package, but at least she got Bob off the
hook. Well, she probably had a little dog, and, you know, she heard that the police were going out there and, you know, taking away the homeless dogs, putting them in the pound where they can't get them back out, and putting them to death. I mean, that's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, it was either that or my devilish good looks. I don't know which.
Probably both.
Oh, yeah. Somewhere around there.
Well, Fried, you were watching the jury when the dog thing came up, and you told me right away. You said, yeah, well, that's it.
That's it. Well, I mean, I just felt it myself, just from a propaganda point of view. So, I mean, it's all about who's the villain. They were making you guys the villains. It's poop and pee and everywhere. But all of a sudden, he brought in the fact that, well, they kill little dogs, the authorities here, and that's a much bigger villain. That's a real obvious villain. And, you know, it applies to the DA, too. I mean, when she presses these cases, she's essentially helping the police kill little dogs. And I don't know how she gets sleep at night, because she was very upset about it, too.
Oh, that was a question I wanted to ask her, is, you know, how she sleeps at night. I don't sleep very well,
personally.
You
mean you want to know what
she
wears while she's sleeping at night?
Well, both. You know, I could ask both. I don't know. I could dream.
Bob likes her when she got pissed at him. He likes that.
Yeah
it's kind of cute.
So back to the appeal again. You know, another issue besides the constitutional issue is the
you're breaking up a little, Ed.
Oh, that there are statutes in California. Is that any better now? Can you get?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, there are several statutes in California that make it clear that the counties have the responsibility to take care, medical care, provide medical care for the poor.
Uh-huh.
And so, in other words, they're responsible for the health of the poor. So how can that, on one hand, they be responsible for the health of the poor, and on the other, destroy the health of the poor by predicting sleep? You know, that's going to be a good, strong argument in addition to the constitutional.
There's all kind. We've got the constitutional. The fact is double jeopardy, because they got a bunch of infractions, too. In fact, he was convicted of an infraction before this trial, so it's double jeopardy. Although you got off, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're guilty, though, Ed. You've got, like, what, two counts, three counts?
Yeah, and I'll probably two. Was it two? I think it was two.
So you're looking at a year, then, huh?
Yeah, consecutive sentences. But I'll probably not appeal myself. I'll probably have Gary appeal. And Colette and Art too, because then, you know, they don't have any money, so then they'd be entitled to get
a free transcript.
Yeah. I wouldn't, because I have an income.
That's what Alansky would say: turning a negative into a positive. You turn the negative of having no money into a positive. You don't have to pay the fucking courts for their silly little transcripts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that went today. Pretty sad, but, not unexpected.
Now, I want to ask you, on the necessity defense, Colette and Art did not appear in court, did not testify, so they were denied a necessity defense. Is that because they didn't testify or because they didn't show up?
Yeah, that was a real surprise to me that they weren't there during the trial. I mean, Art said on Monday of last week that at the trial, first day of the jury picking, he said to the judge, I got to be off on Wednesday to work. So everybody thought, well, okay, he's going to miss one day. Well, we didn't see him after Monday. He just disappeared, and he has no phone number, so I couldn't get him in to testify on his own behalf.
Yeah.
Colette, of course, Colette just went for her own reasons left.
That's the law, though. They have to testify? in order to use the necessity defense. That's the impression I got from the
judge.
Yeah,
because they you have to prove that the defendant had an actual belief that they were in dealing with an emergency or some damn thing.
You know, they say it's constitutional because there is a necessity defense, but if you're required to testify, you're losing your Fifth Amendment right not to testify, so then it violates the Constitution on those grounds as well. So you also have another challenge you could bring up.
Yeah. Of course, the Fifth Amendment on the sleeping case isn't that crucial, but, you know, that is a...
Well, I mean, they have a Fifth Amendment not to testify, yet their necessity defense is taken away from them then. They're denied due process.
Well, but that's true of all affirmative defenses, you know. If you got an affirmative defense, you got to tell your story. Otherwise, who knows what your defense is?
Well, my point is that, therefore, you can't use your Fifth Amendment, so therefore it violates the Constitution in that sense. Because, I mean, that's according to the California Supreme Court. It's constitutional because you have a necessity defense. So they don't even look at the Ninth Amendment. But you throw that in there, too, and it attacks one of their decisions, which I think was an incorrect one. I don't really think the California Supreme Court is all that great a court.
You know, we have a new Chief Justice now, and I don't know her whole track record, but I saw one decision that she made which was pretty favorable toward us. So.
There's a good chance we're going to win as we get in the upper areas, because this is all about the merchants downtown, don't want the homeless around. It's all about local soft machine corrupt politics. You get up in the higher court, well, they don't give a shit where the homeless sleep, you know?
Yeah. The vagueness could be a big help.
Yeah.
In the higher courts. Plus the Ninth Amendment, I mean, at some point in time, the courts have to face up to it. They've never used the Ninth Amendment.
Mm-hmm. They don't like it, because then then the courts can create rights, they feel. But those rights are already there. I mean, it's, everyone feels instinctively you have the right to breathe, you have the right, you know, the government can't come to you and take away your right to breathe, they can't come and take away your right to sleep.
The basic problem is that just like the legislative branch of all of our governments, both national and state, the judiciary also has the same problem, and that is they're captives of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
They're just doing the bidding of the merchants and the corporations. And, you know,
yeah, especially at this level, right? Because they retire as judges, they go back to their law practice. They don't want to have offended any of the founding city fathers or anything, because they need, that's where the money is for their law practice.
Well, same with the congressional level, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, well, they get offered jobs in Bechtel or Halliburton or something for doing corruption for them.
Yeah
it's well, that's fascism. That's what we live under.
Yep.
That's what's destroying our economy.
So
and our freedoms.
Yeah. Well, we got the whole thing figured out now. What do we do?
We just keep pushing back.
Yeah.
We got to find new places to push. I mean, they have weaknesses. I mean, they're being paid by the public to fuck us over. We have to divide them from the public. If the public knew what they were up to, the public would not be supporting them. As with the dog issue with that woman, you know, as soon as she found out they're killing dogs, that was it. She was not going to convict Bob.
Yeah. We have to invoke the spirit of the Wisconsin, you know. If people could feel as strong as those people in Wisconsin felt, then we'd have something, because then we could hold general strikes and stop the whole economy for a while.
That'd be the thing. The trouble is that the unions that used to be political back in the 30s and stuff are now just out for their own pockets. You know, they don't do political general strikes. They just strike for more money and benefits. And everybody that could stop the city, like the fire, the police, the bus drivers, the train, you know, that anything that could tie up a town is already heavily unionized and actually part of the oppressing class. They make so much money.
Yeah. And they're starting to learn that they're going to have to broaden their perspectives and start including everything.
Mm-hmm. We need some new techniques to use. These are old techniques. We need something to use against the current situation. And as I said, the fascism gets worse and worse and destroys the economy more and more. And as more and more people get impoverished and become homeless, we'll have more and more people on our side in this cause.
Yep. So, and attacking the banks is getting more and more popular, so
That's the source of it. They run up the price of real estate, and you know, they bankrupted our economy. They deregulated them and allowed them to pull all kinds of fancy shit. They offloaded the risk to Wall Street, and then the government bailed out Wall Street, and we're stuck fucking with all these houses sitting there empty while people walk around homeless.
Yeah. What a way to run a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fascism. Yeah. It eventually fucks itself. It only can survive in republics like we have, but when it becomes too powerful and gets fully fascist, it destroys itself.
Rome destroyed itself.
Mm-hmm. Once they couldn't take any more people's stuff, they reached the limit of their empire, they started to destroy themselves, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what we can do, but I'm always in favor of this dialogue, you know, to have a real conversation and embarrass them in public,
mm-hmm,
about what's going on. Talk about real issues like greed,
mm-hmm,
and the horrible dichotomy between the rich and the poor, and mm-hmm, how it's getting worse, and nobody's doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to push it even further in discussion and give more power to the people at the bottom of the pyramid. Like with the jury trial, it shows you when there's a little bit of that juror had some power, and she used it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
Definitely did.
Well, back to you.
All right.
Something you got to call. Okay, see you soon then.
All right, take it easy, Ed. Thanks for the good work.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Steve, are you there?
I'm there. I'm
all
here.
All right. I had to switch sliders. All right, Steve, what's up?
Nothing. I just wanted to call and give you my observations about my disappointment concerning the four guilty verdicts. I did talk to Elliot Anderson, and he seemed relieved that
he's in the studio. Well, actually, the anarchist Bob is in the studio right now.
Oh, good for him. Well, that's great.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well, thanks. I know we talked this afternoon, and you were discussing about having to go back to court. Was it next month to see if they were going to retry you? And we were talking about my feeling that probably just because of budget considerations and the difficulty of, you know, convening another panel, they might decide against doing that.
Mm-hmm. He's only got one charge too, so why bother?
Yeah.
And he's still got a dead dog, so it's not going to change their mind.
Yeah, I'm just generally speaking, I was disappointed. I think that we had a jury that wanted to do something important, that wanted to do something just, and I think that the defense, and by the defense I mean all of us who were involved in the defense of the peace campers, really didn't give them enough, you know, to base a just decision on. So, you know, we got the verdict we got.
And now we're ready for the appeals, where we really change the law.
Yeah, I did talk to Gary Johnson today, and he was saying that now is the time to start perfecting the appeal and working on that, and he's ready to go forward. I think all of us will be, with kind of renewed vigor, to see if we can correct some of the obvious errors, I think, in procedural aspects of the trial.
Mm-hmm. That should be awesome. There's also some double jeopardy issues with all the other infractions. And
yeah. Well, I'd be interested to see when they go to something next week if they really do apply some kind of some version of the Kellett decision.
To the sentencing.
Before trial commenced. So we'll see what happens with that.
Because we're contending that it's the whole process is a single course of conduct.
And I don't think it's you can dispute the fact,
mm-hmm,
that all of that derives from one single course of conduct.
That's
teaching.
Right. How would you divide it? You know, I noticed they gave, I think it was Art, got two lodging tickets on the same night.
That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and I don't. And they took great pains to say that they gave all these warnings. They never ticketed anybody, you know, without giving a warning. And obviously they're implying that they never ticketed anybody more than once on the same night. And, you know.
I'm pretty sure I heard, because she had that big fancy chart they spent all that money on, and I think she said something about, and this night and same night, I mean, at 1 a.m. and 3 a.m., Art got a lodging ticket.
Yeah, well, I'm disappointed.
Look at it this way, Steve. I mean, if it was a 90-day protest. Had they been, you know, diligent and given a lodging ticket every night to Bob here, he'd be looking at 45 years in jail for sleeping.
Yeah, no argument. Absolutely. Unless
ridiculous.
They see the wisdom, or then should see the wisdom of the Kellett argument that you were instrumental in bringing. to the defense. So, you know, I think, you know, on appeal, I think we just have to work harder, dig a little deeper, and preserve all the issues and really work on it. I would love to see this go to the Sixth Appellate. I think I was telling you that, and I don't know if I mentioned it to Bob, but my community property professor in law school sits on the Sixth Appellate District, and he is a fine legal mind. So, you know, there are some good thinkers up there.
Oh, well, we can't have you giving them any cookies. You know, that could have been why we lost this trial, is because the jury got all those cookies.
Oh, yeah, the dark side had all the cookies.
Have you researched that yet? Is that an appealable issue?
Well, it depends on the cookie, you know.
We're looking into the chocolate side of it.
Anyway, I just wanted to call and to give you my observations, and, you know, Bob, take care of yourself, and Free, we'll talk, and we'll get this appeal going.
All right, buddy. Thanks
cool.
a lot.
We got 60 days from the final here, right?
Yes, what's that now?
60 days from the notice of the final judgment.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll follow up.
And actually, Ed's already written like a writ of prohibition that has a lot of the issues covered, so it's partly done.
Yeah. We'll just still keep on it. It's not over.
It's never over. The struggle
care.
Never ends.
All right.
All right, Steve. All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. Take care.
FreakRadio.org, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Well, what's your plans now, Bob?
Well, I'm going to go lodge somewhere and do the criminal act that I do every night.
You'd be a jolly lodger. This is a pirate radio station.
Oh, yeah.
I'd let you lodge here, but it's prohibited by the anarchistic collective.
Well, That's very kind of them.
But, and we'll be followed by someone else anyways at 10.
Uh-huh. Well, it's not a problem because I'm out there every night. I just wish I didn't get woken by a flashlight.
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, where you can also hear our show archived under Free the Land.